listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Peter Grandich. And Peter is a frequent guest on this show, and I like to have him here to help us try to live up to our name, Turning Hard Times into Good Times, because Peter has discovered a truth about life that I think a lot of people don't really recognize, and that is that good times in terms of human contentment, joy, peace, happiness, those kind of emotional positives are not guaranteed by wealth and fame, power, those kind of things that we seem to be chasing after all the time. Peter knows that because he has had, well, he's had a lot of wealth and been a pretty famous guy as well. And I've known Peter for a long time, probably three decades or so. And I've never known him to be more happy than he is now. So thanks for joining me again, Peter.
Always a pleasure, and you're right. It's hard to imagine, but it is 30 years that you and I have known each other.
It sure is, and I remember, you know, before technology is what it was or what it is today, I remember going to some of your conferences and enjoying them, and you still have a lot of things going on down there in New Jersey. I want to touch on that today if we can a little bit towards the end of the show. But, you know, it's really... We've been through a lot of different times together, through some rough times, some good times financially, and some tough times financially. And the sector that you were involved in, and I'm still involved in, is sort of a manic depressive sector. I mean, a boom and bust, and you have times when money flows easy, and people get reckless, and they get crazy, and they make lots of money, and then they turn around and lose it all. So it's really not the healthiest environment to be in, I must say. But in any event, you know, we've known each other for a long time. I want our listeners to sort of to learn about your current activities, Peter, what you're doing. But for the sake of discussion, can you tell our listeners, tell us a little bit about what you're doing now and why you decided to leave what you were doing before?
Sure. So you're right. From 1984, when I first came as stockbroker, by 1995, I had been a manager of some hedge funds and a mutual fund. And really, from the late 80s through 2013, my primary source of personal income and interest was the metals and mining industry. I did start back in 2001 a separate Christian-based company that specialized in servicing professional athletes, but throughout mm-hmm. that time, until January 1, 2014, my interest is mostly was in the metals and mining. And you're absolutely right. I think it's one of the best descriptions I heard, but I think you have to be a manic depressive to stay in it. You said boom and bust, but to me it always seemed like there was more bust than boom. And the good times didn't seem to last anywhere near as long as the bad times in the metals and mining. But nevertheless, made a decision after making and losing millions of dollars a couple of times, and once being a legend in my own mind, and turning the Ten Commandments into the Ten Suggestions. As the new millennium took hold, my faith came stronger, and my desire for more money lessened, thankfully. And by the end of 2013, I made just a decision to just focus on two things, the Christian Sports Management Company and Christian Sports Ministries in general. I spent 13 years with the New York Giants doing Bible study in chapel, and I'm still very involved in sports ministry. But nevertheless, I still look at the markets. I do not write about them for any type of profit. I manage no one's money but my own. I am part of a financial service group, and within that group there are guys that handle the people's equities and things of that nature. Ironically, my end is the insurance end, but I still speak about markets and economies because of a love and the fact that I felt that God had blessed me a little bit with some knowledge in that area. Mm-hmm. And you and I spoke a week ago after I had written something about for the first time using the terminology since before the new millennium, I wrote a piece that said we are now entering a melt-up. And I had said that there hadn't been only two others that I've seen like this in my 30-something years, early 1987 and late 1999. And I have written to my readers of my blog that I believe we're now in a similar situation. The only thing worse than those two is the country socially, politically, and economically is far worse off than it was during those two periods. So when the inevitable meltdown from the melt-up occurs, we will not most likely be able to rebound in the quick fashion that we did both in 87 and 2000. And of course, obviously, I presume you're going to want to speak a little bit why I feel that way. But that's really the generality of, A, what I'm doing and what brought us today to have a discussion.
Yeah. Well, certainly the melt-up image is something that Michael Oliver, who was on our show the first segment today, he's certainly with you on that. And a lot of Austrian economists see it that way too, Peter. You know, all this money that's just pumped into the system to try to keep things going, it's artificial. And what people don't realize is it's based on debt. And our money is created from debt. It's not asset-based money. It's not a gold or a silver-backed money. It's debt money. So the more debt, I mean, it's perverse, really, because the more they print, the more debt we have, and the more people get themselves into trouble, corporations, countries, individuals, and I presume, I mean, that's the economic side of things, but you mentioned socially, and I don't know if what other words you used, economically, morally. Talk to us a little bit about that. Where do you think, how do you think we compare now with 1987 and the year 2000?
Sure.
Those are pretty traumatic events.
I think the biggest thing, sorry, Jay, I think the biggest issue there is I can't recall in 87 and 2000 such a divided country as we have now. I don't think half the population in those periods hated the other half of the population, yeah, as it clear to me is the case now. There seems to be no middle ground. The middle, not only has the middle class of evaporated in America, middle ground seems to have, we seem to be very tilted to the right or very tilted to the left. Now the left gets a lot more of the media coverage because the media itself is made up of mostly a majority of people that think left. I'm not here to discuss which is right or wrong. I'm just being rationalized and looking at a picture. And so we have that. Then we have even political, I consider it political paralysis. I find it hard for any Republican or Democrat group to demonstrate to me in maybe a couple decades of real sound fiscal policy. As you noted, debt has, you know, grown exponentially. It really took off during the Obama administration, but there were Republicans there too that participated in that. I don't see where it is easier to be a business person. The majority of my clients are small to mid-sized business owners, and to almost every single one of them, they will speak about how much more difficult it is to operate a business. From all sorts of things, from regulation to dealing with people and what you can say and can't do and rules and things of that nature. And then, of course, economically, if you don't look at what an index is doing at this moment, the Dow or something, and you looked at us from an economic standpoint, I think we're in really deep trouble. The debt is beyond the point now where I think principally, I don't know how it ever gets paid off, certainly not in your or my lifetime, and maybe not even our children or grandchildren's lifetime. And if there's really a substantial increase in interest rates, I think you can start making an argument on how it will be difficult to service that debt. And then we don't even think anymore or talk about more of the localized issues. Here in New Jersey, where I'm located, we have a tremendous problem with government workers' pensions underfunded.
Oh, and yes.
You can go through that in the corporate world. And today there's an article in MarketWatch, and I would urge people to read about it, how the Census Bureau has done studies now showing that America's in the worst position possible in decades in terms of savings and being prepared for retirement. And yet there's a small percentage group that's doing extremely well, and, you know, maybe it's the people that live and work on Wall Street and a few other areas, but mostly in most other areas of the nation, people are struggling now more than they struggled 20 or 30 years ago. So to me, and I guess I can say, because I am out of the prognostication game, I don't have anything to sell. There's not anything. I'm just an individual speaking. But to me, I would say it's a day, it's a week, or a month from now. It's kind of like bottle rockets when we were kids. I don't know if you remember, Jay, or if you ever did that.
Yeah.
You put the little firecracker that was on a stick, and you got all excited, and you lit it up, and for a few seconds, maybe it was an eternity, as a kid it went up, and some went up just a little ways, and others went way up, but they all blew up and came back down to earth, and that's the inevitable thing that's going to happen in the manner that the stock market here in the U.S. is behaving. And one other thing I think that's important that's not being discussed at all is both the geopolitical and economies outside the United States. I don't think people have understand how critical China was since the millennium that held the world economy together because of the strength it had coming into this millennium. And that strength is gone. They are no longer the engine they once were. And when you look at that, and you look at Europe, and you throw in everything else that's happening socially, economically, and politically, I don't know how people can expect the U.S. Economy and markets to do well when everything else around it is in the position it's at, even if you want to give better value to the U.S. than I do at the moment. So with high valuations, sentiment off the charts, the complacency has never been this high. The NASDAQ today relative strength index just went above where it was before the tech bubble blew up. I mean, that's how overbought markets are, even from the technical, and your gentleman you have is a far more qualified to speak about technicals than I. So it's just, it really truly is not a question of if in my heart. It's only when, and I don't think it's more than a day, a week, or a month before we're talking of at least a sharp correction, and that's all it'll be viewed at before. But because of everything else that I just shared with you is so much more worse off than it was in 87 and 2000, I don't think when the inevitable big pullback comes, I don't think the market's going to be able to bounce back and go back to new highs like it did in 87 and 2000.
All right. Well, when you have this division that you spoke of in the country where people are hating each other for just for being on the other side, essentially, and no one, or at least it seems to me, at least from the left, but it's also true from the right, people are not willing to sit down and listen to the other side at all. It's just trying to shout down everybody. So, Peter, if we have another, you know, 2008, 2009 scenario, in which, you know, maybe the next time there's no China to bail us out. What do you think the policymakers will do? Let's say we have another stock market debacle like we had in 2008, 2009. What will be the policy response this time, Peter? What do you think they can do?
I don't know what they can do. Monetarily, they've shot. I mean, I guess they can always create a QE5 or some quasi system and flood the banking system with money again and start forgiving these loans and, you know, this or what have you the case is. But when you look around, and let's just, if we have a minute, let's just first look at Europe. There's no question now that Britain is not going to be the lone duck that's going to move away from the European Union. The political movements in France and Italy are moving to the hard right. It'll only take one more major country to make a movement out of the European Union. It even looks like Merkel is very beatable in an election right now. So
yeah.
I see trouble for the European Union. Now, we also can look at China. China is in no way, shape, or form the massive producing growth machine that it once was. It's still going to grow. It's not going to go to negative growth, but it has a whole bunch of issues. So I ask people and all, and then they say, well, the U.S. is great. It's got great multinational companies. I said, okay, but where's their business going to grow from? You can only buy back so much stock from cheap debt that you borrowed and get, you know, short-term earnings relief from that. But eventually, you have to sell more widgets, and you have to make more money. And, you know, productivity is dropping like an anchor here in the U.S. I mean, it really concerns me greatly to the point where I would say that in 33 years of being in and around Wall Street, I've never been this concerned about the future. Now, I'm safe in my personal faith belief because of what I've chosen to believe and where I believe what's really important for me mm-hmm. is my life after this one. But for those mm-hmm. only concerned about life here presently on Earth, I think it's a very, very difficult time ahead.
Well, it's hard to argue with that from my perspective as well, Peter, because, you know, you got to sell more widgets, but if you've destroyed the middle class, who's going to buy them? If you have, you know, 0.1% of the population getting filthy rich beyond anything they could ever consume, and the rest of the population becoming poverty-stricken, then, you know, the parasites have eaten away the carcass and there's nothing left, and it's really sad.
Well, I think the problem, and you brought out, well, what will they do is people will, you know, immediately think the government will have to do something and solve it, and the problem is the very people that led to the problem. Look, Jay, you don't have to look past the fact of what happened last time, and before we run out of time, I think this is critical. People didn't understand exactly what happened. They didn't understand all this thing about mortgages and things and mm-hmm. how did, you know, $1 trillion be lost, but they heard even these financial firms, they actually took the other side. They actually sold this stuff to these people knowing it was no good. Yet, you know, no one really of any consequences went to jail and all. But the reason people didn't understand it because they don't understand finances. And I always said to people, imagine if you came home tonight and you heard this story, that GM, Ford, and Chrysler were all found guilty of not only making cars they knew were going to crash, but they bought life insurance on the people they sold the cars to, so when they crashed, they would make twice the money. Well, that's what the financial world did in the last financial crisis. Nothing's changed, Jay. I'm going to tell you now, you can just Google fines, problems with financial institutions, and you'll get hundreds of pages of things that have continued from there, from interest rates to fixing, you know, foreign currencies to everything. I don't think the financial world changed one iota. And so if and when this terrible time or even a typical downtime comes between the politicians and the financial world, I don't think either one can muster up anything to save us this time. I think when this next time comes, we're going to pay for it for a very long time.
No, I think you're right about that. Well, Peter, I certainly agree with you and your sense of the eternal, and that life doesn't end here, and that you know there is a better life ahead for those who have faith in the promises that are given to us by our Creator. But in the meantime, though, we still do have to live here, Peter, as long as God gives us breath, and we do need to look after our families as best we can. I don't know if this thing is going to end in some sort of a deflationary debacle or a hyperinflationary event, or I guess nobody really knows except the Creator Himself. But what is your suggestion for people now, aside from, and perhaps the most important thing you and I would both agree on, is that faith is the most important thing, that the sense, unless you really choose to believe that there's nothing after this world is over, after this life is over. I don't believe that for various reasons we don't have time to go into now. But what would you suggest people do while we exist in this four-dimensional time-space continuum?
Well, because I know you, I can say both you and I, our creators, told us that we should be in the world but not of the world. So one of the first mm-hmm. things we should be doing is not living the way the world is living. And I chose to do that, and I chose to do it in a tremendous way, especially in the last several years. And one of the way the world's been living is living off of debt, more things. You and I know, I told you that even though they didn't do anything wrong, the public storage business is the poster child for what's wrong with America. Our mm-hmm. parents and grandparents never needed public stores, so they didn't have that much stuff. So one of the things when I sit down with people, and most people don't want to hear it, Jay, that's why I don't have a big clientele anymore, but less is more. Less mm-hmm. debt. We don't need all the things the world tells us we do. In fact, I really got deactivated politically, and people say, why don't you get with such and such? You know, I say, listen, my prayers to my Lord and Savior, I really feel will do more than anything I can do backing some political movement at mm-hmm. this point in time. So for me,
I agree.
My faith, my trust in God, to know that He's still in charge, and to learn what He taught us in the Bible. The Bible's a manual to life. And the second most talked about topic is matters of money and possession. There's not one positive word about debt, and there really is a less is more philosophy that God spoke about. And I think that's how people have to live their lives out. And believe me, I hear from so many people that once had much higher living standards and ways. Once they finally mm-hmm. bit the bullet and they realized they didn't need all of that, they have a peace and tranquility, like you say that I have, that they never had before.
Oh, well, I agree with you. I can definitely definitely identify with that as well. Peter, you know, I'd like to tell my listeners that they should really go to petergrandage.com, because you have a lot of material there and various things, various topics. You mentioned that you also work with the professional athletes. And there's, there's a section on your website over to the right.
Yeah, the download section. I know there are some of our best writings at Peter Grandage, G-R-A-N-D-I-C-H, one word, petergrandage.com. Just go to the left side. You'll see downloads, all the things we've written. You can read the free copy of our book. And then there's a Peter Speaks, and that's our blog. And if you just put your email in there, anytime we write something on there, it'll be sent out to you.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, there's things then along the right-hand side, too. The sky's the limit with Sky Blue. And I just with a minute left or so, Peter, talk to us a little bit about this, your relationship with, I guess it's a women's professional soccer league or something.
Yes, one of the growth industries. It's past our time, Jay, but for the younger folks in the world, soccer has grown to be a major sport being played in the U.S. now. All the kids, especially the girls, now participating. And there's actually a growing league in the United States, a women's soccer league, and the team here in New Jersey, which is called Sky Blue, we now entered our third year of a working relationship with them. We not only assist the players and management all with their financial needs, but we help them grow their businesses and work in the business community. And it's very exciting, and it's a growth sport. That and lacrosse are probably the fastest growing sports now in the U.S., and we're enjoying it in the twilight of my life.
Interesting. Well, there's so much more, so it's petergrandage.com, folks. Go there. Thank you so much for being with us again, Peter. We'll look to do it again in another few weeks. So all the best to you, and God's blessings to you.
Same here, Jay. God bless.
All right, folks. Well, that is all for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Ron Paul's former chief of staff, Jeff Deist, as well as Daniel McAdams, who is his foreign affairs advisor. We're going to ask both those gentlemen what their thoughts are with respect to the Trump presidency and where we may be headed, both with respect to the economy, which Jeff Deist will talk about, and then foreign affairs and geopolitics with Daniel McAdams. So hope that you will join me next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Dynacert is a global leader in carbon emission reduction technologies. Created for use in diesel engines, the hydrogen unit has been proven to reduce carbon emissions by up to 40%, increase torque, improve engine oil quality, and provide up to 19% in fuel savings. Our leading-edge technology is designed for tractor trailers, rail, marine, and newly developed for diesel engine cars. Reducing the amount of greenhouse gases provides benefits to the environment, to communities and businesses, and to our shareholders.
Golden Predator Mining Corp., a well-financed gold exploration company operating in Canada's Yukon. Focused on advancing its Three Aces project, a high-grade gold project located in the southeast Yukon with gold and quartz outcrops at surface. Ongoing work includes trenching, roadwork, drilling, and bulk sampling. Golden Predator also holds the past-producing Brewery Creek project located near Dawson City, Yukon. Golden Predator, a company working closely with Yukon First Nations. Golden Predator trades on the Canadian Venture Market as GPY, and in the U.S. OTC market as NTGSF.
Chilean Metals is a Canadian junior exploration company focusing on high-potential copper, gold prospects in Chile and Canada. Chilean Metals' Zulima property is a Candelaria-like prospect, one of the largest mines in the world. The company has begun its drill program in Chile on its Zulima property and should be completed by the end of February. We also own a 3% royalty on future production on Teck Resources' Copaquiri property, potentially worth millions of dollars annually. This is the time to invest in Chilean Metals, a discovery story with a hedge. Traded TSX Venture under symbol CMX.